Ready?
Here.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the Senate Committee on Environment and Natural Resources for May 3rd. We are hearing three bills today, all agriculturally related bills. And the first one up will be a hearing on House Bill 2336A. I'm going to ask Beth to do a summary of the bill, and then I have to apologize in advance. I have a bill that I have to go testify on, so I'm going to hand the gavel over to my trusty Vice Chair, Senator Olson, and we do have other members that are testifying on their bills, so we're going to be in and out today, so apologize in advance. I do see that Representative Clem is here, so Representative Clem, I'm assuming you want to come up and provide some introduction on these bills, and with that, I will have Beth do the summary and hand the gavel off.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2336A defines key terms, exempts agricultural producers selling specific agricultural products directly to the general public, otherwise known as the farm direct marketer, from state laws regulating produce dealers and food establishments, establishes criteria for eligibility for exemption, and requires labeling of those products. There was a minimal fiscal impact, so no statement was issued, no revenue impact.
Do we have anybody to testify in favor?
Start with Rep. Clem.
Representative Clem.
Representative Winger, to see, I don't know if he knows about this or not, but I'll speak to that in just a second. Thank you, Mr. Chair and member of the committee. For the record, I'm Brian Clem, the state representative from part of Salem here in District 21, and also I was chairman of the Agriculture Committee last session in interim, which is where this bill came out of, and then I'm the co-chair with Representative Jensen of the Agriculture and Natural Resources Committee this session. So 2336, I have three of them here, so that's the one we're talking about first, if
yes,
I understand
it
right. Okay. So the genesis of this bill was a visit that I took during the 09 interim, sometime in the fall anyway, to a farmer's market in Portland. I went to quite a few of them that summer around the state, and I always go to my one here in Salem, but I went to several around the state that summer. And this one was up in Portland, a Hollywood farmer's market. And I was talking to some of the vendors there, and most all of them were growers. There's a few people at that one who do some food cooking who I don't think are growers, but most of the vendors there are the growers themselves. And they were telling me about some new sort of visits by the Department of Agriculture, some new questions being asked that they thought some were, you know, fine and some didn't really make any sense. They didn't understand where this was coming from. So I said, well, it sounds like there's something has happened around the issue of farmers markets regulation that's changed. Because they said this is a new kind of, I don't know if they use the word hassle, but new questions and some new forms maybe they had to fill out. And they weren't, I didn't know exactly what the problem was, but I could tell they were not really happy and they were busy trying to do business. And so they just said, hey, you know, could you look into this? So we held a hearing in the Ag Committee, the Interim Agriculture Committee, sometime later that fall. And we asked farmers from around the state who sell it at markets to come and talk about, and the department to come talk about whatever this was that was going on. Turns out that the advent and development and growth of farmers markets kind of happened outside of the statutory system for food safety per se and the food code in particular. So for example, technically at any farmer's market, I was told and our committee was told that you would need to have fixed walls and plumbing at every single stand. Well, you can't really put your easy up just in somebody's parking lot for the weekend if you're going to have to build a wall and plumbing. But the Department of Ag, seeing that how great farmer's markets were for growers and for our economy and how popular they were among the eaters, weren't interested in enforcing laws like that that were illogical, so they sort of let that go. But at some point, you've got to actually modify the laws. You can't just have them on the books not being enforced. And so we came to the conclusion that we really needed a work group to discuss the current sort of practices and standards and policies around farmers markets and the underlying statutes to see what needed to be changed to both address current practice and then what would help keep these farmers markets going and maybe even growing. And so Representative Wingard volunteered, much to his chagrin, probably now not knowing how much time would be involved, to lead a work group. And so he spent dozens of hours, many times. I went to a few of them, and then I was like, okay, we'll see you in a while. And all these really hardworking people met for like a year and went through every sort of concern, every issue, and in the end, every single item that might be looked at and sold at a farmer's market for whether it needed to be, in this one particular case, produced in a commercial kitchen and under the licensing and inspection scheme. There's other things in the bill that don't have to do with that, just updates to the food code, but that's the one that kind of caught the most attention in the House, is under what scenario should you be able to have a labeling requirement that says this was made in a homemade kitchen, but not have to actually build a commercial kitchen and go through the full ODA fees and regulatory process. And so we drew the line after a year's worth of work and the input of the Department of Agriculture Food Safety Division, which is here, a lot of experts from Farmers Market World who are here, several growers. And these are things like, if you wanted to roast your peppers, technically that's processing it, and so therefore you would need to go and get a do it in a commercial kitchen, get a license, all that kind of stuff. If you want to take your nuts out of a shell, that's technically processing it, so you would need to get do it in a commercial kitchen. And so we came to the conclusion in the House that there's some threshold where you actually shouldn't have to go build a commercial kitchen and do inspections and pay all the fees and all that kind of stuff, because they're so low risk that it's not really an issue. And this, people have obviously been doing this for hundreds of years in this country without any incidents of foodborne illness coming from these sort of person-to-person sales. And we felt like the accountability that's built into direct sales at a farmer's market, where you know who it is you bought the food from, was more than enough. If there were an issue, not to mention there'd be a label saying this was made in a homemade and this is a homemade product, not in a kitchen. You may remember Willamette Week wrote a few stories about somebody getting in trouble for putting in the ingredient list that this cookie was made with love. And so stuff like that was all brought up in this work group, and a lot of time was spent to try and get something that could be a consensus product between the ag food safety folks. There was an open invitation for anyone who wanted to attend. The grocery stores were there for a little while to say, you know, are we going to get put on an unfair playing field for what we have to do at a grocery store that the farmers markets don't? They were fine, and you know, went to a few meetings and monitored the bill, but didn't have any issue with it. So that's really the whole story behind this bill. And again, the underlying goal is bring into modern reality what's kind of already happening at farmers markets, so our food safety and ag officials aren't having to operate on what's common sense but not the law. Now we mirror, you know, we align common sense and the law in one place, and then specifically provide some regulatory relief and lack of regulation and fees around low-risk food production by folks, and instead substitute a labeling requirement. And that was the one point that had some level of discussion in the House, where there were a few people who were a little bit nervous about that. So when you see a no vote, that was what that was about. Some people just, you know, want you to build a commercial kitchen and go through the full scheme, no matter, even if it's just taking a walnut out of its shell. We had a few members that were like that. So it passed, you know, overwhelmingly in both the committee and the House, but there were a few problems for a few people that you should know about. So that's that bill. And I wish Representative Winger was here, because he really should get the credit. I mean, he worked his tail off for a long time, and then I just come swooping in and take credit for it. Yes.
There you go. Do we have any questions?
No, I was going to ask Representative Clem about the feel from the no votes, but he already answered that.
Senator House, any questions? I do have a question for you.
Yeah.
One of my concerns, and it's not a major concern at all, is that if there were to be some type of foodborne outbreak because mm-hmm. of this, which could there's a possibility, did you consider any opportunity or option to just provide a name and an address and a phone number to ODA, just for the purpose of if blueberry jam made people sick, can we track down who mm-hmm. made the blueberry jam?
I'm probably going to ask, I'll just take one stab at it, but I'm going to ask the people who actually went to all the work group meetings to talk about whether that was discussed
okay.
or not, because I didn't, as I said, I didn't go to as many as I probably should have.
Well, then I'll give you a heads up.
Yeah.
I wrote an amendment to that effect, and it's an amendment only for information, so that if we have an outbreak from blueberry jam, we can quickly look in a database and say 18 people produced blueberry jam, and it happened in Troutdale. How many people in Troutdale produced blueberry jam? 3. We've narrowed it down. We can find out who it is, and there's no cost, there's no fee. Just you get on the internet and you give them your name and your address, and I make blueberry jam and sell it.
My one thought on it, Mr. Chair, is the person who got sick, for example, if that's what we're hypothetically talking about, they would have bought it at a farmer's market, and that market would have all that information already for all their vendors, or they would have bought it directly at the grower's site, and they would say, I bought it at this farm. So I think you'd get it from the person who was sick immediately anyway, and if not, they said, oh, yeah, I bought it at this farmer's market. There's a limited universe of people who are vendors regularly, and they have to usually pay something, and I think they probably know who they are. But I'd let the farmer's market managers or their association speak to that, because I think there was some discussion about, well, how about we, even if we don't charge you a fee, we still come out and do an inspections, and in some cases we just decided that's not even a good use of their time because it's so low risk.
Yeah, my amendment didn't deal with inspections. All it did was just registering.
Yeah.
Any other questions? You have more to add?
Not on this one. Do you want me to hang around and take them in order, or just talk about the other two while I'm here? I don't mind either way, but.
You could open a public hearing on the other two, so he could do those two.
So we close this public hearing and open it?
You can just open the others as well.
And so then let's do that.
Okay.
To expedite it for Representative Klim, we will go ahead and open a public hearing on 2872A.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, for the record, I'm Brian Klem, state representative from here in Salem and co-chair of the House Ag Committee. This bill takes advantage. We're doing 2872, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This is the poultry slaughter exemption that's allowed under federal law, and a lot of states had adopted this allowance. We had not. We had some testimony from one. He was a younger guy. It was kind of funny. He came in. He was very honest. He said, I basically illegally created my business, because technically you had to have a USDA licensed facility at even chicken one. If you're going to sell a slaughtered bird, you had to have all the USDA stuff in place. And he said it's about $30,000. And he said, I just couldn't afford it for one chicken until I could get it going. He said, so for a few years, I just did it anyway. And, you know, that's not ideal, obviously, to have that. So then the policy question in front of the feds, I guess, was, you know, at what level of processing of poultry does it really become kind of risky for the public? And they drew the line at 1,000 and said anybody doing 1,000 or less on their own property, selling it right there, they could be exempt from our USDA requirements, and we'll leave it up to states to adopt it or not. So this bill basically adopts it, as a lot of other states have done. And kind of like the other bill, the goal here is to take small farmers who are just getting started and not put them through a regulatory scheme unless we felt through the food safety professionals in the Department of Ag that there was some risk in having that kind of flexibility when you're first getting started. And so I think you can probably hear from ODA on all of these bills to make sure, you know, they are feeling like they did a few months ago when these were in the House, that these were low-risk types of activities and good things for small growers who are trying to get going, get their businesses started. Because, you know, as Senator Thompson knows, in the Hood River Valley and around the state, farmers are starting to get a little older now, and there's not always their kids wanting to come back and do it. And so we're trying to figure out how do you deal with the average age of the American farmer going up quite a bit, and getting these young people involved, even if they didn't grow up on a farm, but they want to get into it, is one way to do it. And so a lot of times they're not inheriting a farm from mom and dad. They have to come up with the cash to buy the acres, and if they were going to start selling direct, to get the facilities up and running. You know, in our case, we own and co-own with my wife's family a 100-year-old orchard. So anything we get, it's just by being born, you know, and we don't have to pay for any of this stuff. But these growers who came in to talk to us, they're trying to build businesses from scratch, and it's pretty challenging. Because there's not a lot of money in a lot of this, as we know. And so we're trying to find ways to help people in the kind of cottage industry side until they can get bigger and afford to do a lot of these things get started. So that's the poultry bill, essentially adopting the USDA allowed exception to regulatory activities under their program.
And I apologize. I should have had Beth read the report on the bill.
Okay.
I don't have to?
We could do that after.
Okay. Okay, then let's open our last one. Oh, do we have a question?
Chair Olson, I just comment that there are some people getting older that farm in Hood River Valley, but I'm not.
He's not one of them.
Okay.
He's not one of them.
I wanted that on the record.
He's pretty young, fit-looking fellow.
Well, we'll open a public hearing on House Bill 2947 so that Representative Klim can testify on that one.
Great. Thank you. Again, for the record, Brian Klim, State Representative here in Salem District 21 and co-chair of the Ag Committee in the House. This one is pretty interesting. It actually came originally from, I think Senator Edwards told me about it, and I know it doesn't seem like an enormous deal, but it actually is a pretty serious matter, and there's been a variety of, in fact, there was a sting operation in Salem around this issue. So what happens is other primarily international entities, you know, growers or governments or whatever, are pretending that their honey is all 100% pure honey, and it isn't. And it's coming in, and the American consumer doesn't know that it's not all 100% pure honey. And the Department of Ag has a definition of what honey looks like, but they don't have all the tools to deal with somebody when they're actually bringing in this kind of, you know, counterfeit or impure honey. So one example is pretty serious. Is an antibiotic was used in China maybe a decade and a half ago to deal with some colony problems and disease in their colonies. And instead of, they had a couple different choices. The one they took was to use an antibiotic that in moderate doses is lethal to humans, and yet it's in their honey now because they went that route. So we don't really want Chinese honey here, but they then began a process called, or a thing called transshipping, where they ship it to some other place, rebrand it, and then it says made in New Zealand. Same exact honey, and we test it, and it's got that antibiotic in it. So this bill gives the Department of Agriculture the requirement, which they are fine having, they can say that for themselves, but to establish standards for identity and quality for honey sold in Oregon. This is really about protecting our domestic American beekeepers and honey for the incredibly great product that it is, from not only people who are putting things in there, maybe not unsafe, but certainly it's false labeling to imply it's honey when it's you know, half honey and half something else. It's not, it's just a filler, but not really pure honey. And then in some cases, actually, pretty serious public safety risk of having things like antibiotics in there that should not be in there, and somebody doesn't know any better, and they're eating the honey thinking it's from New Zealand and some great, you know, program in New Zealand. It's really been transshipped from a country that has known problems, that we would ban that outright if we had known it was coming from that country of origin. So it's I think the bee folks are here too to talk about it. When we had it in the Ag Committee, they were all at somewhere, I don't know if they were working or at a conference, but they were all in California, and so you may have some more bee folks here to talk about this one, because it's important to them to have the certainty that this bill would provide through the Department of Ag's program.
Are there any questions on either 2947 or 2872? Thank you, Representative Klim. We appreciate you coming over and talking to us.
All right.
We'll close should I close the...
You know, I just leave them open for now.
Okay, we'll just leave them open.
Just, yeah,
okay, we'll go back then. We'll bounce backwards so Representative Klim can go back and do his...
I'm hoping to see some of you over in the Ag Committee on some of your bills, but so far we've only had... who we have over there? Przanski's been over, and I think that's about it. But I figure some of you boys must have some Ag bills coming my way.
Well, Ours didn't get a hearing.
Yeah, it's a sore subject. I wish the chair was here so I could talk about it some more yeah. While she's here.
Okay, we'll go back to House Bill 2336, and would Rebecca Landis, Anthony
Boutard,
and Kendra. Kimbrowski. And would you please say your name? Anyone can go first if they'd like.
I'm willing to go.
And if you have your written testimony, if you would just summarize, please, we'd appreciate that.
Okay.
Well, and I made it in like 18-point type for middle-aged eyes and everything. I'm, for the record, I'm Rebecca Landis. I am newly elected president of the Oregon Farmers Markets Association, an employee of the Corvallis Albany Farmers Markets. I'm here to support HB 2336. I'm one of the people that was in the room for the year. As Representative Clem said, it's a product of a year-long legislative work group. There were long-standing questions about the legal status of farmers markets and other farm direct venues, as well as what the farmers who sell in those venues could and could not do. Let me see. I'm going to try to skip over things that he's already said to you. The vote in the House was 45-13. It was bipartisan on both sides. And this was, as he mentioned, was an interim bill. And even though the composition of the committee changed, we still got support of that committee. Many of the provisions in HB 2336 will settle into statute policies that ODA has been trying to apply for decades without a firm, what we all agree was the absence of a firm legal foundation. Pretty much everyone agrees that farmers selling their own fresh fruits and vegetables is a good idea, and that farmers markets should not be treated, are not operating the same as a grocery store and should not be treated the same. But without this bill, these are not firmly established in law. And I'm going to skip over the laundry list of what the bill does. I want to point out the area where there was some discussion, the pickles and the jams and things like that. These are made in millions of homes today, have been keeping food safe for thousands of years. And most importantly, there are no low-acid foods allowed in this bill. Those are the kind of things that require special equipment and skills to produce safely. For the most part, keeping track of your pH, which is something that Anthony assures me farmers do every day of their lives, is what's required to do this safely. Wanted to note that in the February 16th issue of the Oregonian, a state epidemiologist was quoted as saying that he felt that the exemption of some products from inspections is not a source of concern for his office. Regulation is needed in many for food safety in many areas, and this bill leaves many products regulated. You'll note that there's nothing in this bill about dairy, meat, eggs. Well, no, the eggs are in there, but it doesn't change anything about the law on eggs. So areas that require more specialized care are not than what I've just discussed are not in this bill at all. I want to point out that really in the final analysis, it's the individual level of care and concern that human beings place into the food that they sell you that makes the difference between safe and healthful food and disasters like the food scandals that we have had rocking both the national and international food commerce in recent years. The farmers are feeding themselves and their families in the same food that they sell you at the farmer's market or in a CSA box. And for those of you that don't know what that is, it's like a subscription to vegetables. They'll be looking at their customers in the eye every week, and they're not paying someone a legal retainer to make problems go away, like some of these companies that have really embarrassed us on the national scene. The stakes are very high for them, and I feel very safe in their hands, more safe than in some other parts of the food system. I want to point out that the jams and pickles that are sold under this provision of the bill will be grown solely by the processing farm. No commingling is allowed. And this is a very important thing about traceability. Enhances the traceability to a level that you won't find in other parts of the food system, except perhaps if you walk in your backyard, pick the fruit, and walk directly into your kitchen and make jam from it. The farmers who use the provisions in this bill will bear the exact same legal responsibility and liability that they would have if the bill had never been written. And I want to say in my role as OFMA president, I will be prompting market organizations to reexamine whatever requirements they have in their guidelines about insurance requirements, assuming passage, and I would strongly encourage all such farmers to carry product liability insurance. Indeed, I think a lot of them already do, and it's already required in many markets. My market would cover everything in this bill already. By passing House Bill 2336, you'll allow farmers markets, ODA, and the farmers to all spend their time focusing on the right stuff, growing and promoting Oregon's safe and healthful agricultural products, not trying to nail legal jello to the wall. Thank you in advance for your support, and I'll take questions, and I specifically the Vice Chair's question, if you would like me to address
that. We'll finish with the panel, and then we'll...
Okay.
Who'd like to go next, please?
Yeah. Chair Olson, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Anthony Boutard. My wife and I own and manage Ayers Creek Farm in Gaston, Oregon. We grow fruits, vegetables, legumes, and grains. We sell to grocery stores, restaurants, and directly to the public. I served as a member of the working group that put together 2336 during that year, so I worked with Rebecca and the Department of Agriculture. It was a very productive working relationship, and I appreciate the professionalism and the efforts that the Department of Ag took, and also Representative Wingert, who chaired the committee. Over the past 2 decades, agriculture in Oregon has seen a marked increase in venues for selling different types of agricultural products directly to the consumer. The farmers' markets, there's also community-supported agriculture and buying clubs, which have developed without, as Representative Clem said, any clear place in the regulatory structure. They kind of just grew up like weeds in the sidewalk, but it was in the parking lots of schools and other public areas. Historically, roadside stands selling produce, eggs, and honey have been exempt from licensing, but these new venues stretch that definition, and HB 36 provides the necessary statutory guidance on this issue. As a farmer who sells directly to consumers as well as processors, restaurants, retail stores, I believe this bill provides a balanced and sensible regulatory approach to direct marketing. The bill defines direct marketing and identifies food that, from a food safety perspective, can be safely produced by the farmer and sold directly to consumer without licenses or inspection. With the help of ODA staff, these definitions are tightly drawn. Foods that pose a greater hazard, such as sprouts, low-acid canned vegetables and fruits, and baked goods, are not included and must be processed in the licensed facility. It must be stressed that individual farmers' market rules still prevail, regardless of licensing requirements. These organizations still determine who can participate in the market and what they can sell. This was a very important part of the bill, is that it didn't throw a monkey wrench into how the farmers' markets operate, how Rebecca operates her market. With provisions regarding high-acid foods, such as preserves and pickles, the bill provides room for value-added efforts at the farm level, allowing farmers to try out new products at a small, manageable scale is an important step in fostering new ideas and expanded markets. HB 2336 also includes a provision that allows ODA to expand to this list of foods that provides some flexibility consistent with food safety. With the $20,000 annual limit on the sales of these foods, the bill sets up a clear threshold where the farmer must shift into a licensed facility. I regard this threshold as largely symbolic, as farmers with successful preserves of pickles will seek out a co-packer or develop an unlicensed farm facility in order to sell to retail stores. This is just a fact of life. I produce preserves. I go through a co-packer. I think it's actually down Paul Fuller down at Sweet Creek Foods. I think he's in your district. Because I need to get into retail stores. The 20,000 level is just sort of a number out there. But ultimately, if you're successful and you're doing a good job, and I think I'm doing it, I want to be able to sell at New Seasons and Whole Foods, various stores in the Portland area. It's a natural progression. I also want to stress that every jar that I sell either at the farmer's market or that I sell at Whole Foods will have my name and address on it. In fact, this requires a name and address and contact information for the farm on every jar of jam. I'll tell you, it's a much higher standard than many store-bought jams, which do not require the name and address. They just require a business name. And in some cases, for imported goods, who knows where it comes from? So I urge this committee to pass a bill. The lack of statutory clarity has lingered too long. And I also want to just quickly note my support for HB 2872, which is the poultry statute, and especially 2947 for developing standards for honey. As a fruit grower, I rely on the services of my beekeeper, and he deserves a level playing field when he markets his honey. Thank you for the opportunity to testify. Thank you.
Chair Olson, members of the committee, my name is Kendra Kimbaraskis, and for the record, I'm here today wearing three different hats. First off, my husband and I are small farmers in Colton, Oregon. We have a variety of vegetables. We have dairy goats, laying hens, meat birds, and pigs. We sell at a local farmers market and also directly to our customers. I'm also here today representing the Oregon Grows Partnership, and I delivered in one of the documents that you'll get is from the Oregon Grows Partnership. But this is a coalition of food security, family farm, and rural economic development organizations that total a membership of over a quarter of a million Oregonians. And the reason that I provided the documentation to you all is that House Bill 2336 was designated as a legislative priority. Thirdly, I'm here representing Friends of Family Farmers. I am currently president of Friends of Family Farmers. For those of you who do not know, Friends of Family Farmers is a grassroots organization promoting sensible policies, programs, and regulations that protect and expand the ability of Oregon's family farmers to run a successful land-based enterprise while providing safe and nutritious food for all Oregonians. We're here in support of 2336, in addition to 2872, which I'll talk about during that hearing, but largely wanted to relay to you how we've come to support 2336. A year ago, our grassroots organizers traversed the state and held community meetings with farmers and ranchers to talk specifically about the challenges that farmers and ranchers in Oregon are facing while they're trying to produce healthy local food and remain economically viable. The result of those original 17 meetings were that each community elected three people to travel to a delegation that was held at Oregon State University in February of 2010, where over 70 farmers and ranchers came together, and they came to an agreement on what the main issues were for them while they're trying to remain economically viable and produce healthy local food for their neighbors. As a result of that farmer delegation, there was an Agricultural Reclamation Act document that was produced and ratified. It looks like this. And one of the policy suggestions in the document was that we look at reducing some of the regulation around selling low-hazard foods directly to consumers. They felt that certainly that this is not a silver bullet to keeping small farms viable in our state, but it will go a long way in helping the diversified family farmer build additional revenue streams with their farm business plans. And so, as Mr. Boutard mentioned, with the Oregon family farmer, the average age of the family farmer raising to about 58 years of age, we have to find new and creative ways to get new people into agriculture. And as I say, this isn't the silver bullet, but again, it will provide an opportunity for folks to come in and be creative in building their agri businesses in our state. Thank you.
Do we have any questions?
Senator Thompson?
Yeah. Vice Chair Olson, thank you. You made a comment earlier about, if you're going to make jam, it can only come from your farm. So you can't, if you want to make cherry jam, you can't go to the Dalles and buy cherries and come home and make cherry jam with that?
Chair Olson, Senator Thompson, under the to remain under the goodies that the bill delivers, yes, you have to use your own cherries to make cherry jam exclusively, and no commingling. People will be able to use the current law provisions as they do now, but this just says we're providing extra support for the farmers to develop value-added products with their own materials. At the point that they grow the product, they can check it out as a commercial possibility with their own product, and at the point that they want to grow the product outside of the limits of the bill, then they will simply go to a co-processor or license a kitchen on their own property, and then they will be able to do everything that everyone else does. But this is a limited set of privileges that a farm would have if you pass this bill, and we didn't want to make it too broad.
Follow up?
Yes, please.
Thank you. Who monitors that? On your honor system?
All bills, the Oregon revised statutes are filled with thresholds and numbers like those found in this bill. The $20,000 one is a good example. And it's not possible in a civil society to have someone standing over each person to make sure that their conduct conforms to those rules. But in the case of farmers markets, we do have some people who have an interest in monitoring to some degree. I'm not going to lie to you and say that I'm going to catch every single miscreant who has ever walked the aisles of a farmers market, but I honestly think it will be fairly apparent to us when somebody, depending on their farm scale, and we know what they're growing, they have to list their ingredients, they have to list what they're taking to the market to us, and we monitor some of this stuff because we don't want people reselling at a farmer's market. So if somebody is not growing enough cherries to do what I perceive that they're doing, I'm going to start questioning that.
I have a couple questions for you, and it kind of goes back to the amendment that I asked, and I'll ask you this question. Would you feel offended if you just needed to give your name, address, phone number, and the products that you were selling to ODA at no cost?
Vice Chair Olson, I don't think our folks would feel offended. The question is, would it add anything? Would it actually add anything to the provisions already in the bill without adding additional labor that might create a fiscal note and might slow us down in the progress of the bill? In the current bill, you already have to state your name and address and business name, and you know, have to have full contact information on the bill. You have the additional labeling requirement saying that you're not licensed. So the person that buys it is going to hang on to that jar, and they're going to be able to contact the vendor directly from the jar. If for some reason they have recycled that jar, they know that they bought it at a farmer's market. The farmer's markets all have web pages and phone numbers and stuff like that. I can, in the space of 3 minutes, identify the person who sold them the product. And so the cost of the ODA setting up the online database and maintaining the information, which then becomes a public record, I don't see that we actually gain anything from it. It's not a matter that we would be offended by providing what we're already providing. It's kind of like, at this point, we have to scrutinize everything that we ask our public servants to do as to whether it adds enough value. And I think that the current provisions in the bill probably would take care of the traceability. And, in fact, I think it's more traceable than anything else in the world other than something you grew.
Do you have any comments on that?
For the record, Anthony Boutard, I would echo Rebecca's stance. I'm not offended if the state has lots of information, and I run a labor camp and other things. I'm registered here and there. The registration, I'm certified organic, so the registration is not an offensive thing to me. But the question is, do you gain anything from it? And I believe that the most effective tool for tracing a bad jar of jam is your name and address on it. It's also probably the gold standard for assuring that it's good, because I have to have repeat sales.
The only point being is that if the Department of Health needs to do a quick trace, quick search, they would have that data available immediately on a website, and they wouldn't have to try to locate what farmers market might have sold it in the town of Gresham, so that they could just go, you know, three pen strokes on the computer. They know the area, they know the person that might have sold the jam, and they can narrow it down very quickly. Yes, ma'am.
Rebecca Linus again for the record. I don't think that would actually save the health the epidemiologist any time, because if they have that information, they've already had their interview with the person who's become ill, and they already have been conducting an inventory of what that person ate, and I don't really think that database will cut out any steps for them. They already have that data. If they're at the point of thinking of blueberry jam, they already know what they need to know.
Okay. Senator Prezansky, do you have any questions?
I apologize to the chair and to our panel. The A3s, who's presenting them?
That was me.
Okay. Just one with the origin.
Okay. If there's no further questions, do we have anyone else that would like to testify on HB 2336?
Then we will close the public hearing on HB 2336, and we will continue with HB 2872, which is already open to public hearing, and we'll have Beth read the pertinent information.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2872 would exempt from food established license requirements anyone who slaughters not more than 1,000 poultry per year for human consumption. There are requirements that the poultry be free from disease raised by the person from 2 weeks of age and slaughtered in a facility owned by that person and meeting state requirements. The person is required to maintain records and allow inspection of those records and the facility. There is a minimal fiscal impact, so no statement was issued and no revenue impact.
Okay, Lauren Gwynn, would you like to testify by yourself, if you don't mind?
I am.
And you're with Oregon State?
I am.
Oh, gosh, do we have any beavers here? Do we need to get some ducks in here?
Well, we've got some ducks.
Oh, we got some ducks.
I went to land grant school in Texas, so I'll sub in.
Okay.
I'll be an Aggie.
Yeah, you're covered.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Lauren Gwynn. I'm from Oregon State University. I am also the co-coordinator of a national group, the Niche Meat Processor Assistance Network, which is a national network of extension professionals and others who work to support small-scale processing. I appreciate the opportunity to testify in support of this bill. I have brought my original testimony, which I gave on behalf of myself and also Gary Stevenson, who is the director of the Small Farms Program at OSU, at the House Committee hearing in support of this bill. In the House, we suggested an amendment to restrict sales in this bill to on-farm only or direct delivery. That change didn't happen. We suggested this because when the point of sale is not where the processing occurs, for example, if the birds are sold at a farmer's market, you increase the possibility of a lack of knowledge by the consumer about processing conditions. However, without that amendment, we still continue to support this bill. We think it's a good idea for a number of the reasons that Representative Clem mentioned. And we want to emphasize the importance of working with farmers to ensure that they do follow proper processing procedures and protocols to assure food safety. And that's something that we at OSU want to do and will endeavor to do, because this bill doesn't require us to do this. There's no fiscal impact. But it will be easier for us to do this kind of work if the legislature is able to put money back into our budget to support the extension work that we do. So I'm happy to answer any questions about our support for the bill, but I think a lot of those things have been covered.
Are there any questions? I guess I'm going to lose the gavel here shortly. So
talk fast.
We're going to quick go to a work session and
okay.
Get the thing passed. Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And let's see, we have Rebecca Landis. Jan?
York.
And Kendra. I'm not even going to try your last name again, Kendra. It's too difficult. Nice name, but Smith would be nice. Okay, who'd like to start? Jan, why don't you start?
All righty. I'd like to thank you all for taking the time to see us. I'm Jan York. I'm with Sarah Jolie Gardens. We're a new family farm located outside of Oregon City in Estacada's beautiful Viola Valley. My husband, whose degree is in speech communication, is a union carpenter by trade. In 2009, when the Oregon economy began to slow and the commercial building industry in the Portland metro area began to plummet, we recognized that at 50 years of age, an industry with a boom and bust cycle was not going to do what we needed it to do for stability towards our retirement years. Not wanting to rely on unemployment, Tony enrolled in Clackamas Community College's Small Business Development Program, and he began his path to self-employment. We sold our home, purchased property, and began to develop our family farm. We now raise laying hens, rabbit, lamb, and pastured poultry. Our chicken is delicious. Everyone who has eaten it has been back for more, have told their friends who have also come back for more. We have an eager customer base, but in order for our farm to be profitable, we need the Senate to pass HB 2872. The law as it now stands In order to sell our birds commercially, we have to use an approved processing facility, as everybody else does. The one that's closest to us, an Estacada, is in Skye, Oregon. It's approximately 150 miles and 3 hours round trip for us. As you know, in business, time is money. That's 3 hours every 2 weeks for the entire summer that we would need to travel. With gas at $4, close to $4 a gallon, and a processing charge of $5.50 per bird, this greatly increases our carbon footprint and makes our business to be less profitable while operating under the current law. While developing our farm, we have infused our local economy by using local hatcheries, buying feed from our local mill, and using litter that's scrapped from the local lumber mill. The more profitable we become, the more revenue we have to spend in our local economy while improving our farm. We are a family farm, and our children, Aaron, who is with me today, is 22, and our son, Tyler, is 25, are involved in every level of the business. Their volunteer efforts are appreciated and worked really well for our farm last year. Unfortunately, my son, Tyler, is a millwright with Blue Heron Paper Mill in Oregon City, and he lost his job unexpectedly at the beginning of this year. If we're allowed to increase our farm with the passage of HB 2872, we can expand our business, actually have a salary for our son, as well as pay additional employees. When we spoke with Senator Thompson in March, he let us know that he endorses this bill, and we ask you to join him with a positive vote. Our poultry is hand-raised, hand-processed, and hand-delivered to our customers. We'd like to ask the Senate to give us a hand in helping to make our company more profitable. Thank you very much for taking your time.
Thank you. I apologize for being out. I was testifying on two of my bills.
No problem.
I'm sure my vice chair did an excellent job.
Indeed he did.
Thank you.
Passed out three bills. We only had two.
Yeah. I know. The Republicans were trying to hold me up over there.
Thank you. Thank you. Chair Dingfelder and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Kendra Kimbaraskis. I'm here as a small farmer who raises pastured poultry, as well as president of Friends of Family Farmers, a nonprofit organization promoting sensible policies, programs, and regulations that protect and expand the ability of Oregon's family farmers to run a successful land-based enterprise while providing safe and nutritious food for all Oregonians. Jan's testimony is a tough act to follow, so I will keep this short and sweet and just say that Jan's story is not isolated, that our farmers and ranchers all across the state are telling us that their consumers want more of their delicious poultry. They have nowhere to process their poultry if they do not have a state-inspected poultry processing site on their farm, and that a way for them to grow their business so that they potentially could build a state-inspected poultry processing site on farm is to be able to sell up to 1,000 birds in a calendar year. This, no one's going to get rich off of doing this, but it is the ability to be able to sell your poultry to your neighbor is a value-added revenue stream for a small family farm business. I also want to just follow up. Jan had mentioned SIA Oregon, SIA Poultry Processing. Karen and Joe Schuler are fantastic people. They just recently opened up their USDA-inspected poultry processing operation, but it is the only one in the state. And SIO is on the western side of the mountains, so those farmers in eastern Oregon really don't have any opportunity to get their poultry processed in a USDA facility. So with that, I encourage you to support House Bill 2872 and give Oregon family farmers a hand. Thank you.
Great. Thank you.
Rebecca Landis, President of Oregon Farmers Markets Association, employee of Corvallis Albany Farmers Markets. Oregon Farmers Markets Association is part of the Oregon Grows Coalition, and as I think Kendra mentioned in the last bill, we have priority bills. I believe this bill is one of them, so I'm here to support it. Yeah, on a personal level, I've been working with farmers and farmers markets for nearly 17 years now, and we have a lot of bright young people coming out of OSU who know what you need to do poultry. But they need a bottom step on the ladder so they can get started. And I would love to see many of these people grow to the point where they can get to the next USDA exemption level, the 20,000 bird that we already have in law. But this has operated very successfully in many states. There aren't horror stories out there. We would have gotten them by now if there were any.
It's a successful program, and Oregon should go ahead and recognize the exemption. And I look forward to working with the fine folks at OSU, Lauren Gwynn, among them, who will help bring the information to producers that they'll need to do this successfully. And I'm confident they will get that done somehow.
Thank you. Thank you, ladies, for coming here today. Let me see if there's any questions from any of my committee members.
I have one.
General, sir.
And this is a good bill. If I was in your neighbor, I just might sneak across the fence and get a couple of those birds for myself or just invite them over for dinner. The only concern I have heard about this bill is you mentioned that your son would come work for you, and the concern being that if your son came and worked and he started his own business, so therefore you're selling 2,000 birds out of your particular area, would he need to have his own processing area?
He would need his own property and his own processing area because we're limited to that 1,000 bird annually regardless of the number of employees we're able to hire.
Okay. That answers my question. It's good, and I wish you all great success in your bird ventures. That's all we're doing this year is eggs and birds. And
yeah, we've got a lot of chicken, feathered friends. Any other questions? Okay. Thank you very much for coming to testify on this.
The work session?
We're good.
We got it listed. So.
You want to open up a work session?
Fine.
Okay. You guys okay with this bill? Okay. So we will go ahead and close the public hearing on House Bill 2872A, and we will open up a work session on House Bill 2872A, and I'll accept a motion.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2872 with a due pass recommendation.
Okay. Senator Olson moves House Bill 2872A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objections? Clerk, call the roll just so we make sure you're staying awake.
Aye.
Including Committee.
Aye.
Senator Thompson?
Aye.
Senator Olson?
Aye.
Senator
Dinkfelder? Aye. With that, the motion carries. Do we have any...
Senator Thompson.
Any volunteers?
Yeah, he's a chicken.
For the fine feathered friends.
He'll carry the chicken bill.
So Senator Thompson will carry the poultry, will be our poultry expert. With that, we will close the work session on House Bill 2872A. We'll open up our last public hearing on House Bill 2947. Beth?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2947 would require the Department of Agriculture to adopt rules which relate to the sale of adulterated, misbranded, or imitation foods, establishing standards of identity, quality, and labeling for honey sold in Oregon. There was a minimal fiscal impact, so no statement was issued, no revenue impact.
Okay, thank you. We have Fred Vanetta and Rebecca Landis. Would like to testify? Whoever would like to go first.
You signed up first. I am Fred Vanetta, a beekeeper for 60 years, a member of the Willamette Valley Beekeepers Association, the Oregon State Beekeepers Association, the American Beekeeping Federation, and the Western Apiculture Society. I've been asked by the State Association to come speak to you on this bill. While in most of my 60 years I've not been a salesman of honey, this is a bill that most directly affects Oregon's commercial beekeepers. The testimony you heard before that the commercial beekeepers were gone was because they were all in California pollinating almonds. They're now dribbling back to the state, but they're getting ready to pollinate fruit in various places. I think it's been explained to you well that the purpose of the bill is to allow the department, give the Department of Agriculture the authority to regulate honey. The problem arises because only a third of the honey that's consumed in Oregon is grown here. The rest of it is imported either from out of state or from foreign countries. the production, processing, and shipping honey from foreign countries we have no regulation over and no way of knowing if it has been adulterated or if it has been produced and packaged in a way that we would not allow to be done in Oregon. There are generally accepted international standards known as the Codex Standards. Several states around the country have adopted the Codex Standards. There's been some effort to try to get the feds to adopt them, and they haven't. They have not been, to date, interested in it, so the beekeepers are trying to get each state to adopt the Codex Standards. We're appreciative of the positive response the legislature has given on this issue so far. I'd be happy to answer any questions that you might have on the subject that I'm able to answer anyway.
All right, thank you. Why don't we hear from Rebecca first, and we'll see if there's any questions.
Just briefly, again, representing the Oregon Farmers Markets Association, Corvallis Albany Farmers Markets, we favor these bills. Kendra was thinking she'd need to leave, and Friends Family Farmers would be in support as well. I do want to clarify, we don't really think that this bizarre substance masquerading as honey is actually making it into farmers' markets. We're not concerned that that would happen, but it's a broader issue than that. I think we all rely on pollination a third of what we eat. We need to do everything we can to support legitimate beekeeping activity, and that includes protecting the consumer from things that are not honey. And it seems like a fairly straightforward process to do this. It's not straightforward because of the complex international food system we operate in, and I'm happy that there's someone here that knows the details and has been able to fill that in for you. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? No questions for the beekeepers. Well, thank you very much for coming here. And I do buy my honey directly from the farmers market and get to know my beekeeper, so that's sort of fun. Okay, with that, we will close. Oh, anybody else that'd like to testify on this before we close the public hearing? With that, we will close the public hearing on House Bill 2947. We open up a work session. We will open up a work session on House Bill 2947, and I will accept a motion.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2947 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Olson moves House Bill 2947 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, the clerk will call the roll, please.
Senator Hall?
Aye.
Senator Donkey?
Aye.
Senator Thompson?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. With that, the motion carries. And Senator Haas, would you like to carry this sweet bill?
This is sweet.
So with that, Senator Haas is the carrier. And we will close the work session on House Bill 2947. And let me note for the record, it is before 4 o'clock. And we are adjourned.
That's because you had an efficient.
All right.
Ready to let go.